This is Real Life with Lisa Jesswein on Empower Radio.
EmpowerRadio.com.
Here's your host, Lisa Jesswein.
Well, hello, everybody. How you doing? I have a very unique experience occurring at the moment that I'm going to share with you, because this is all about being able to sort of settle yourself and relax yourself when something isn't quite going the way that you want it to. We're going to have Carol Brody Fleet on today. It's a return visit. She's the dynamic founder and CEO of Widows Wear Stilettos and author of Happily Even After a Widow's Journey. And it's a guide to getting through and beyond the grief of widowhood. When I said we're dealing with something interesting here is we're trying to get a hold of her, and we're having issues connecting with her. So when stuff like that happens, right, you've got one plan over here, like, okay, this is what we're going to do today. And then something else occurs. How do you address it? Right. You can either flip out and get angry about it and get worried about it and think everything's coming to an end. Or you can just sort of say, hey, hold on here. Let's have him answer that. Talking to my producer there, because we're talking in between producers trying to get Carol on the phone here. Because last time when we had Carol on, it was fantastic because she really helped out. I happened to have my friend who lost her husband about 4 years ago. I had her in here, and we were dealing with a lot of issues that really stopped her from moving forward. And today, we wanted to continue on the discussion with Carol, because you don't even have to have lost a spouse to benefit from listening to Carol. The thing that makes it really the sort of great interview for everybody to listen to is because it's about overcoming obstacles. At the end of the day, it's about dealing with your own pain and overcoming obstacles. Where we left off before, and where we want to go to today, is dealing and the continuation about dealing with anger, because that's still out there. People who've lost their spouse sometimes have the "you left me" feeling in them. You left me, even if that person died to causes that were beyond their control. So dealing with anger, we also want to talk about a new type of relationship. And I'm talking about that twofold. The first new type of relationship that I'm discussing is about the spiritual relationship that you have. What are your beliefs and understanding and values about what happens when someone passes away? Do they cross over? Are they accessible to you? And how do you sort of mesh that to create a new relationship with your spouse that has passed on? So we want to talk a little bit about the spirit world and creating that new relationship. Now, another new relationship that we need to talk about is dating again. We touched on just a little bit before with Carol, but now we're going to talk about that. When do you remove the ring, changing your name, all of that. And then also kids and holidays. And look at that, just like that. Carol, are you there?
I am here.
Yay, Carol. I'm so happy this all worked out. I did my best to keep us going here, and I knew sooner or later we'd get a hold of you. Thanks so much for joining us again.
It's wonderful to be back with you.
Well, thanks for doing this. Unfortunately, my friend Kathy, who joined us last time, could not join today, and she was really upset about that. But I told her, you know, you can listen to Carol's interview. It'll be on the it'll be on EmpowerRadio.com.
Hi, so. Kathy. You.
There you go. That's fabulous. Well, I was giving everybody just a little review about some of the things we discussed before and what I want to touch on today. And the first thing that I really want to go to, and we touched on this a little bit last time, but I still know, and I think she'd be okay if I said this, she's still having a problem with this, and that is anger and the "you left me" feeling.
Right.
So how do we move forward in that area?
Well, first of all, before we move forward, we embrace it.
Mm.
You know, sometimes we're in so much of a hurry to be past the pain that we forget to embrace it and actually deal with it. And we need to do that first. It's so normal to be angry. It is so normal to feel abandoned. That's another important thing to embrace, is that we feel that there's something wrong with us. Maybe there's a person or two in our lives who's telling us there's something wrong with you. This is such a normal part of the grieving process. is to be angry. I started my whole anger phase the moment that my late husband was diagnosed with ALS. I got angry and I stayed that way for about 2 years. Now, I don't recommend that.
Right.
But that's the fact. When you are affected with this horrendous diagnosis of somebody that you love, you're going to get mad. And that's okay. Do we want to stay that way? No. Embrace it. Understand that it's normal. Dissect it. You know, why am I angry? Is it an abandonment issue? Is it a betrayal issue? That's a whole other show.
Mm-hmm.
Why? What is your reason for the anger? The problem is, oftentimes, is that you don't have anyone or anything to actually direct your anger at. Illness, for example, is the fault of no one.
Mm-hmm.
So that it is a difficult process, but it's normal. It's okay. You do get to the point that you realize, you know, it's nobody's fault, and you are going to have to start to slowly let go of this anger. A lot of people imbue spirituality to help them do that. Other people seek out help to enable them to do that. Whatever your catalyst is to help move you through anger, find it and begin that process. But you got to start by embracing it first.
Okay, and your anger, was it directed at the illness or at your husband?
Really, just at the universe in general. My anger manifested in the why me syndrome.
Mm.
Again, very common. You know, he's this wonderful man who dedicated his entire life to serving his community as a police officer and to his country before that as a veteran. We were wonderful people, living a wonderful life, raising a wonderful child, doing all the right things. And I saw this as some kind of perverted retribution, you know, that the universe was wondering, okay, who can we mess with today? We'll mess with the Fleet family. It's that kind of thing. And understand that in a grief-stricken mind, you're not necessarily rational.
Yeah.
It took a long time to get past that, because who do you point that anger at or to? So I was just angry, period.
Yeah, because the anger that I'm, you know, still hearing from it is directed at her husband, and literally the words, "You left me."
And you've got to get logical at some point and know that they really did not intentionally leave you. And this includes anybody who is a suicide survivor, because people see that as a willing act. Again, that's a whole other show,
mm-hmm.
but understand that with someone who commits this horribly permanent act, it's not that they wanted to leave. They just felt it was too painful to stay. And there's a difference.
Right.
You have to get inside the psyche and the disparity of somebody who commits suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not as easy and as cut and dried as, well, since they had the control over that particular part of their destiny, they chose to leave me. I am abandoned. So and it's a little controversial, but I do maintain that when it comes to death, including by suicide, nobody's choosing to leave.
Right.
So that's one of the steps that I took in realizing that anger at my husband, per se, is that was not okay. And again, mm-hmm. I'm speaking for myself.
Right. No, and it's, you bring up a really good, interesting thing that I want to move into next, because we didn't get the chance to touch on this before. And just real briefly, can you tell us how long ago it was that your husband passed away?
It'll be 13 years in December that I lost Mike.
And of course, people would ask you, does it get any easier?
It does begin to get easier as you move forward. It takes on, the loss takes on a different complexion. And the smiles come more often than the tears. And I say that, hopefully, as a beacon of hope.
Okay.
That you're not always going to be in a place of despair, of raw grief, or raw anger, or raw anything. It does start to temper. It doesn't just happen with time. In fact, that is going to be the subject of next week's Huffington Post article.
Oh.
Because we're in the middle of a bereavement boot camp. on Huffington Post. And, you know, I really do not care for the well-worn cliche, time heals all wounds. Because if you're waiting for time to heal all wounds, you're going to accomplish nothing but a whole bunch of waiting.
Uh-huh.
That it just doesn't work that way. But with the proper tools, with proactivity, and with time, you can move forward past that place of raw grief. So, you know, does it get easier? Does it get less difficult? It gets different, is what it is. That experience is always going to be a part of you. That's important to embrace, too. You're never going to dust off your hands and say, okay, that's done. What now?
Right.
You're never going to do that. And you're not going to be the same person post-loss as you were pre-loss. It's impossible.
Right. Now, that moves us into where I want to take next, which is about creating a new relationship with your loved one who has passed on. And yes, I'm talking about the spiritual, ethereal world and
right.
people's beliefs in what happens when their loved one passes on, and whether or not they have the ability to actually talk to them and touch them and create a new relationship. What are your thoughts on that?
I know that a lot of people, a lot of widowed, do seek comfort in that way. And they derive a lot of peace from it. And my mantra is, whatever it is that helps you find your joy, your comfort, your peace, your solace, your mechanism of hope, you got to go for it. It's not going to be the same for everybody. Everybody is going to seek that solace in different ways. For me, it was my spirituality did play a role in it. It was not the sole. It was not the sole basis for my recovery, and I did not. And again, I'm speaking for Carol only.
Sure.
I did not seek comfort in that way by trying to contact or go to what we call crossover experts. That was not my mechanism. That was not my choice. But you know, I always say, as long as you are not coping in a destructive manner. And we can. There's a huge list of destructive matters. It's not just alcohol or drugs or the obvious ones. As long as you're not going down that path, whatever you do that is going to help bring you some measure of peace, you go.
Mm-hmm.
You do that. And don't let anybody deter you from it or tell you that it's nonsense or it's ridiculous or it's stupid. That's very easy for other people to do.
Sure.
Opining on someone else's life, which is not okay. So if that is your way of shifting the paradigm of the relationship, continuing a relationship in a different way, if that is what is giving your heart joy or rest or gladness,
right.
you go right ahead.
You know, I think more what I was, you know, I want to bring it back a few steps, Carol. And basically, I was asking you, do you talk to your husband? Do you feel his presence? Because, and you know what? I have no problem saying this. I have been an intuitive medium for, you know, over 20 plus years.
Mm-hmm.
And I am a big advocate of people utilizing their own resources and their own God-given intuition to connect with those who have crossed over in whatever manner they feel. Like you said, if it feels good to talk out loud, do you ever talk to him? Do you ever feel his presence? Has he ever done anything funny or interesting or loving that you thought, oh, yeah, that's him? That's more where I'm going with that.
Okay. Do I talk to him? I have, definitely. sometimes I have, usually after, as you know, I remarried in 2009, very happily so.
Aww.
But between the time that I resumed dating post-widowhood and the time that I met my new husband, there was a long line of loser brigade that I was dating. And when I would come home, I would blame Mike.
No.
That. And I would do it out loud. And there was one night, and I've written about this, where I was just so thoroughly disgusted with the date. And it was such a waste of time, energy, and makeup that I came home and I took off my shoes and I threw them across the room. And I started yelling at Mike, "You did this to me, Fleet. Are you laughing? I know you're laughing at me." And I just went off. So, you know, oh, yeah, I talked to him, yelled at him. Another more poignant moment for me was a number of years ago when my daughter was a competition cheerleader, and she had won a national championship, and this was her pinnacle. This was her Sergeant Pepper. And in that moment where the parents were reunited with the squad and everybody's crying and screaming, I looked up and gave a thumbs up upwards because I knew at that moment, wow, he's here and he has seen this. And then went right back to being in that moment with my daughter and her friends on this great accomplishment. I have absolutely, definitely felt him. He is he's such an impetus for the reason Widows Wear Stilettos exists to begin with.
Wow.
So to not acknowledge that would be absolutely impossible.
Yeah.
In fact, shortly after he died, I used to comfort myself. He had a great big, you know, testosterone filled Ford 3/4-ton pickup truck.
Okay.
And after he passed away, anytime I saw a similar model of pickup truck, I would tell myself that, you know, Mike is talking to me because he just sent me a pickup truck. And I know that sounds ridiculous.
Oh, no, it doesn't.
And listeners, it might sound ridiculous.
Yeah.
But again, I go back to what I just said earlier. If this is how you seek comfort, if this is what makes you feel better, doesn't matter if it sounds ridiculous to everybody else in the world. It's bringing you what you need at that moment in time.
Amen. Did everybody hear that? Okay. If it makes you feel good and it helps you, it's okay for
it's
you
about
to...
ownership. It's about ownership.
Absolutely.
Not only, you know, it's one thing to say, yes, this is my healing journey because this terrible thing happened to me. And it doesn't necessarily have to be death. But whatever it is that has set you on a path of healing, you need to seek out healing in the ways that speak to you. And if other people around you don't like it, that's fine for them. We're talking about you now, and it's not just enough to embrace the fact that you are on a healing journey. You have to own it. This is a car that you're driving. Get into the driver's seat of your healing journey and say, okay, this is mine.
Mm-hmm. And
you, own it.
You have to treat it a little bit like a smorgasbord, like you said before. Like, oh, okay, I'll try this book, or I'll try yoga, or I'll go ahead and try music, and you know, maybe I'll study some spirituality. Treat
yes.
it as if you're stepping up to a smorgasbord and you taste a little, and you might go, oh, I don't like that.
Or, exactly. Or, if it doesn't work for you, oh my gosh, Lisa, so many people have said to me, well, I tried support groups and they weren't for me. I went to a therapist and we didn't get along, so I just quit. And my favorite analogy is, you know what? Let's say I've got a sore throat and they put me on antibiotics and the antibiotics are not helping things. I have never once said, you know what? I'm not taking medicine anymore because obviously medicine doesn't work. You keep going until you find what it is that speaks to you and in the ways that you need to be spoken to.
Mm-hmm.
I am the first person to say that my personal approach to grief recovery and what I advise and the guidance that I provide, it's not for everybody because I'm not very rainbows and bunnies. What we're doing right now is called bereavement boot camp. That's not very warm and fuzzy, but you know what? If you want to hang with me, I'm going to get you to where you want to go. If it doesn't speak to you in the way you need to be spoken to, you need to move on to someone or something that does. The important thing is to facilitate healing, not to make friends. So that's my approach is I want to get people to a place of peace. And that includes helping them find what it is that's going to speak to them if our approach isn't that mechanism.
I love that. And what's the website again that they can look all of that up on about contacting you and all that good stuff?
Widowswearstilettos.com.
Widowswearstilettos.com.
Right.
A great resource place for you to go. Again, could be something that you sample from the smorgasbord to help you out with this. We're sort of getting towards the end here, but I do want to touch on the fact that we are just now moving into the holiday season.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And this is a lot of difficult, you know, issues coming up for people on the holidays. We put a lot of pressure on it. How do you approach the holidays?
I approach the holidays differently every year, to be honest with you. In fact, listeners, if you're not familiar, I lost my husband 6 days before Christmas and right in the middle of Hanukkah. We were an interfaith family. So there's a double whammy there. Not only are we facing the holidays, this is when the loss occurred. So naturally, this is when the anniversary of that loss occurs. So every year, what's important to do is tune into how you're feeling that year. What do you feel about the holidays? Do you want to stay at home and take your comfort in the traditions that you enjoy with your loved one? Or do you want to mix it up? We've done both. On the fifth anniversary of Mike's passing, my mother, my daughter, and I went to Las Vegas. and we had a toast to Mike, who we knew was saying, you know, that's what you need to be doing. You need to be in Las Vegas. I don't want you to sit around being sad. Other years, we have, you know, stayed home, and we have kept things very small and very quiet. Certainly, that's what we did at the beginning. So you need to tune into you. Again, it's not about what other people are saying to you. You should be doing this. You shouldn't be doing that. What are you thinking about by taking a vacation? You mm-hmm. need to listen to you.
Mm-hmm. And I would be like, honey, where should I put these chips? On what number? help me out with that a little bit.
Yeah,
while
exactly.
Then, you know, you include him in the trip. I love that. I'm going to get down to asking you the RL3. We already kind of know what one answer is because we got it again. And that's my real life three questions that I ask, something fun so that people get to know a little bit more about our guests. But can you just give me sort of one or two words about the empty nest syndrome? Because now, my friend now has both of her kids gone and off to college, and she's dealing with that empty nest minus a husband as well.
That's a tough one because I went through that as well, and it does take a lot of adjusting. What you want to do again is embrace the fact that this is a loss. It is the loss of a kind of relationship that you've always known. Your role as a parent is now changing. That paradigm is shifting. So what's the first thing we do when we're dealing with loss? We embrace it. We embrace it. It's okay. You're going to feel a little lonely. You're definitely going to feel out of control, which is horrendous.
Yeah.
And it's difficult. Keep not constant contact because your children need to go out there and find their feet and start to discover themselves
mm-hmm.
as this new independent person that they're becoming. But keep in contact. And then, you know what, sit down and make a list of all the things that you'd love to do and couldn't because there were children in the house, whether it's walk around without clothes on or, you know, be silly, be serious. But, you know, start to get to know who you are. Look at this as a period of exciting discovery. It doesn't have to be just, oh, my gosh, now my kids are out of the house.
Right.
What do I do with myself? Because you know what? I know it's hard to believe, and it might be hard to remember, but we were girls before we reproduced, and we're still there. So
yeah.
Take this opportunity to get to know you. What about that Zumba class that you always wanted to take, or what about that cruise, or whatever it is that you had to put on a back burner? What about going to Color Me Mine and making pottery? Whatever.
Yeah, find the inner little girl. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
There's to that.
We need to do that. And that's excellent advice for anybody, even someone not going through the grief. So what was your fantasy name again? That was your first pet in the street you grew up on? What were you again?
It doesn't make any. My first pet was Simon.
Simon.
Because it was a Siamese cat.
Right. And
the street that I grew up on was Ostrom.
Simon Ostrom. Okay, you sound like some sort of secret agent. So
I love my daughter's. My daughter's is much better. Hers is Nikita Ponderosa, which is much better. So let's use Kendall.
We like Nikita Ponderosa. All right,
Ponderosa.
Answer this question. I will never eat blank.
Seafood.
Never eat seafood. All right, we got that.
I'm the worst Californian in the world, but I
yeah, really.
I wish I loved seafood, but it looks so beautiful. I can't stand it. I can't even smell it.
All right, and your final question here: who was your favorite teacher?
Jean Genesowski, my high school journalism advisor. Because when everyone said no, you can't be a writer, he looked at me and said, "Yes, you can."
We love that. We always remember those teachers that really sort of encouraged us and got us going on the right path. And obviously, look at you ended up writing. So
yeah.
We love that. So widowswearstilettos.com. If you just Google that or you Google Carol Brody Fleet, she'll come up. She's all over the internet. You can connect with her again. So remember, this is just a taste of something that might really help you on your journey. Carol, I'm so grateful that you came on again, and thank you for sharing all your knowledge and some of the fun stories. I appreciate that as well.
Oh, Lisa, thank you for having me. It's always fun spending time with you.
Thanks, Carol. You have a great day.
You too.
Thanks.